compared to hymns like Christ the Lord is Risen Today, that's a newer one. And I enjoy it because I think many a person has thought religion is strange while sitting in a church, but not everybody gets to sing it, and so that's always a nice moment. I had a really good laugh in yoga this last week. Well, first, I had a religious crisis, and then I had a good laugh. One of my favorite instructors was opening class with a little reflection on connection and unity, some great themes, and as a part of it, she was sharing a little anecdote about her family. And she made the comment to the room, she said, "Some of my family drives me crazy because they're really religious." Then she looked over and she said, "No offense, Brad." And my internal dialogue went something like this. Why would she say no offense? I mean, the only person who could get offended by something like this is a person who's really, "Oh, she thinks I'm really religious." And then I had to remember, I am an ordained pastor. I am a paid religious professional. My master's degree is in divinity. I mean, of course she thinks I'm really religious. Now, at this point, all I can do is chuckle. All I can do is chuckle under my breath because I'm a pastor who doesn't want to be thought of as religious. I mean, I guess I'm willing to be thought of as religious, but only if we can redefine the term. You see, often when people use the term religion, they're referring to something they're not a fan of. They're talking about the dogma, the exclusion, the institutional absurdity that is far too common within the religious traditions and Christian denominations of our world. Religion sometimes gets a bad rap because it's often used as a tool to exclude and marginalize people, most recently under the guise of religious freedom. Sometimes it's used to define who's in and who's out based on what answers people give to loaded questions that those asking them get to determine. Or religion's used as a, well, if you will blindly agree to this belief statement, then you get to be a part of our club. Those are some of the worst examples of religion I can think of. And we hear of it far too often. If that's religion, I want no part of it. Now, it's interesting to me, this dilemma of defining religion and what it means to be religious is how I started last week. This was 7 a.m. on the Monday morning of Holy Week, which is quite possibly the most religious week of the year. And here I was, not sure what to do with the idea of being religious. But religious how? Does it have to be in that way, or is there a different way? So I decided I needed to spend some time thinking about this, and I went to what Winnie the Pooh would call my thinking spot. When I need perspective, when I need to get away, or just when I want to be reminded of what is important, I have a habit of heading up to the tower room, going up a series of ladders, and spending time on the church's roof. The big tower on the corner has a beautiful spot where you can stand and look out and see things. It's an amazing view. You can see the entire Front Range from Pikes Peak to Long's Peak. You can see all of Metro Denver. And honestly, our roof possibly has the best view of the Denver skyline there is. But most importantly for me, when I'm up there, I can see our neighborhood. And when I'm up there, it's always a beautiful day. You see, the alphabet and numbered grids of streets that we call home here, that Main Street feel of 32nd Avenue, the sidewalks that are busy with people going here and there, walking their dogs, pushing their strollers, enjoying conversations. I feel at home in our neighborhood. It reminds me about what I do and why. And as I stood there, wondering about religion and Holy Week and Easter, I had to ask myself, as I looked out across the neighborhood, what does Easter have to do with any of this? Why would Easter matter to any of these people? Why does Easter matter to me? Hear the Easter story as it's told in the Gospel of Matthew. After the Sabbath, as the first day of the week was dawning, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to see the tomb. And suddenly, there was a great earthquake, for an angel of the Lord descended from heaven and came and rolled back the stone and sat upon it. His appearance was like lightning, his clothing white as snow. For fear of him, the guards shook and became like dead. But the angel said to the women, "Do not be afraid. I know that you are looking for Jesus who was crucified. He is not here, for he has been raised, just as he said. Come, see the place where he lay. Then go quickly and tell the disciples, 'Jesus has been raised from the dead, and indeed goes ahead of you to Galilee, for there you will see him.' This is my message for you. So the women left the tomb quickly with fear and great joy, and they ran to tell the disciples. But suddenly on their way, Jesus met them and said, "Greetings." And they came in front of him and grabbed hold of his feet, and they worshiped him. Then Jesus said to the women, "Do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee, for there I will see them." This is the scripture I was reflecting on as I had to ask the question, what does Easter have to do with any of this? Looking out from that roof, I had to ask myself, earthquakes? Really? Angels? Empty tombs? People rising from the dead? What does this have to do with any of those people eating sweet cow as they walk home? What does it have to do with those two hipsters who are on their way to drink craft beer? What does it have to do for the person who's down there waiting for the bus? Here I was, a week before Easter, asking what on earth Easter has to do with that sea of 100-year-old rooftops and all the people who live beneath them. A week before the biggest moment in the religious year, and I was at a loss for why it matters to anybody, especially those who aren't religious. I mean, it's not an easy story to share. I mean, seriously, what's with the angels and the earthquakes and the whole rising from the dead thing? These are not simple conversations. They're not easy to apply to life. Why couldn't the Easter story be more relatable? You know, like the ones from earlier in Jesus' life when he was living the first time. Throughout the last couple months, we here at Highlands United Methodist Church have been focusing on the people Jesus met and the effect that he had on their lives. How Jesus brought them not just new life, but a new way of seeing life. See, those stories, they make more sense to me. Those are the stories that I can see connecting to our lives. Like the story of the woman caught in adultery who found new life when her accusers couldn't cast the first stone. It's relatable because in that story, we find that proving someone else is more broken than you does not make you whole. Or the story of Zacchaeus who found life when he was invited to a table after having been so excluded because of his own actions. He was welcome as he was, and that motivated him to change in ways he never believed possible. It's relatable because it's a story that reminds us the best way to define our lives is not by dividing or separating people, but through acceptance. Or there's that story of the rich man who was so focused on himself and his own possessions that he lost all meaning in his life. We can relate to it because it's a story that we discover by only by focusing on relationships will we find our part in something bigger and connect to something more in life. Not through what we have. Or a couple weeks ago when we looked at the story of Lazarus, when Jesus sat there weeping at the death of his friend. It's relatable because it's a story that encourages us to acknowledge the pain and sorrow we experience in life, not to rush through it to try to find some happy place for the sake of other people, or not to push others to a place of, I don't know what to do with your grief, so hurry up. It reminds us that we can feel what we feel, and be who we are, and God is there with us. You see, these are stories that certainly have something to do with our lives. I easily see these stories applying to the everyday lives of anyone I meet. Because they're stories about feeling pain and loss. They're stories about being judged. They're stories about how our possessions change the way we see the world. They're stories about being excluded, making changes to better ourselves. These are stories about life. Stories about life. And that's when I realized what I was doing wrong. Here I was trying to separate Easter from the life of Jesus. Separating Easter from the life of Jesus is really, really ironic. Because the entire point of Easter is that Jesus is alive. You see, the life that Jesus was living, that life of love and acceptance and justice and hope, that life was so significant and so important that God could not allow it to end. Jesus was and is the living embodiment of God's love. And through Easter, God is demonstrating that nothing can separate us from that love. Through Easter, God is inviting us to join in that action of embodying the love, acceptance, justice, and hope we see in the life of Jesus. Easter invites us to become a part of that life. See, Jesus lived a life of relationship. Jesus built community. He sought to help people live authentic lives with integrity. And he constantly invited people to be a part of and share what they had with something bigger than themselves. Easter invites us to do the same, to live those values and that way of loving life, to bring those things, the love, acceptance, justice, and hope, to bring them to life and to bring them to our lives. And this is where Jesus and Easter begin to reshape my understanding of religion. Because as I mentioned, I don't like the way religion is used and often understood in our world. I don't like when religion is about dogma and excluding people in this institutional absurdity, getting caught up on itself. That is not the way we have to let the world define religion. I mean, who would want to be a part of that anyway? Where's the life in that? But what I do want to be a part of, what I see in the life of Jesus made real once again on Easter, that's something I want to be a part of. A movement that's focused on connection and community. A movement that offers accountability for living what we say we believe. Something that offers us an ability to contribute what we have and what we do and who we are to something bigger than ourselves. That's the kind of religion I'm willing to be associated with. If that's what religion could truly be and be known as in this world, I would take offense at not being called religious. Because religion, that religion, is about life. Life that is the embodiment of God's love. Love that we can never be separated from in life or death. You see, that's why the people of Highlands United Methodist Church gather together. We gather together on Sundays in worship. We gather together on Saturdays feeding the homeless in the park. Or in Tuesdays for bar trivia. Or we sit over ice cream and have conversation. We gather together because of life. To be surrounded by people who are just as imperfect as we are, but who are also trying just as hard to not simply make it through life, but to make sense of life. We gather together to serve others in ways that bring respect and opportunity through relationship. We gather together to look for examples in each other, from the youngest to the oldest among us, examples of what the best moments in life can be, so that we can celebrate them and seek to create them in our own lives. We gather together to be a part of something bigger than ourselves because we aren't enough on our own. And when we gather together, we seek to embody God's love for all people, no exceptions. And by doing these things, we're seeking to continue that life that Jesus lived, carrying on the love that Easter brought to life and to our lives. Happy Easter. Amen.